Attention for one moment, please. As the chairman of the 48th annual meeting of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences, I would like to welcome all of you to our banquet, the culminating event of our annual meeting of the year 1990. Can we have just a moment of silence so anyone who wishes to take time out before we break bread to meditate or to pray or to reflect can do so. Thank you very much. Smacznego. Please. You may, I know that many of you are still eating and please feel free to continue eating, but I thought that maybe we could start our program, but I repeat that I will not feel offended if you continue eating your entree, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you will not deem it presumptuous if we decide here and now to declare the 48th annual meeting of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences a success. Once again, I think that we have demonstrated the great vitality of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences. I am sure that we have not achieved perfection, and surely you must have encountered some problems here and there and everywhere. But overall, I hope that you are generally satisfied with the 48th annual meeting. Of course, I wish to express thanks to all of you who are here this evening, all of you who have made the success of the annual meeting possible. Above all, those of you who have participated in the meeting as presenters, panelists, chairpersons, commentators, etc., the annual meeting, the annual committee meeting composed of our program co-chairpersons, Dr. Jim Pula, who is on this side, Dr. Bolek Biskupski, who would you please sort of identify yourself, the co-chairpersons of the program committee. And of course, Dr. John Stasik, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University. Our local arrangements chairman, I've never had a better one in my experience dealing, organizing an annual meeting. He did a fantastic job, and we're very, very happy to be at Georgetown University. He made the mistake 2 years ago of telling me when we had it at American University, he said, well, why don't you do it at Georgetown? Well, I said, okay. I came up to him and, some time ago. We would like to do it at Georgetown, and John Stasik made it possible. Of course, I have to also acknowledge the fantastic help that I received from my assistant, who happens, I think, to have the misfortune of being my sister, Mrs. Jane Gramada Kedron, who is out there still, you know, keeping an eye on everything. She was in charge of all of the administrative matters, and I have to admit that I don't think that I would have been able to do anything without her help. I also want to acknowledge the help and the support of our president, Professor Gross, of our executive director, Bolesław Łaszewski, who worked very closely in supporting the organization of the annual meeting. Naturally, you know, we have a staff of people at the Polish Institute who have been working and helping us with our annual meeting. Mrs. Ewa Markowska, who of course is here, Mrs. Julia Częstochowska. And naturally, I cannot forget the young man who was working as an assistant to Mr. Warszewski, Ludomir Lożny. He has been a valuable asset to the organization. And my sister also has her assistants. You see, of course, her husband, Henry Ketron, Krystyna Marik, and Wiesława Pirka. And so I think I've covered all the bases. I guess I should also thank the board of directors of the Institute, who, of course, they were the ones who first authorized the holding of the annual meeting at Georgetown University. They had the good sense of of doing that, of authorizing our meeting at Georgetown in Washington, D.C. I want to thank them, and let's give them a round of applause. Perhaps as, and again, I repeat, those of you who have not finished your entree, please continue eating. I hope you've enjoyed the London broil. I think it's, for me it was very good. But I think at this point it might be good for us to introduce the persons who are at the dais. I guess you recognize some of the people who are here, and maybe you are not sure of some of the other people who are on the dais. So if I might, starting with my right, we have, of course, Dr. Jim Pula, who was a member of the board and also who was the co-chairperson of our annual meeting. I have to say, before I go any further, that our board of directors has been strengthened, has been revitalized, rejuvenated, and I must say also it has undergone a beautification process, you know, thanks to your voting on the mail ballot. And of course, I hope that this is not interpreted as a sexist remark, but Dr. Susanna Lotarska is a member of our board who is sitting next to Jim Pula. Another new member of our board of directors, Mr. Michael Sengimir, you will hear from him. And we are delighted to have with us at this banquet Mrs. Zbigniew Brzeziński. She is sitting next to Mr. Sengimir. Mrs. Brzezińska. And of course, then we have Dr. Alina Strzeżniak, a member of the board of directors. I don't think I have to introduce our main speaker, vice president of the Institute, member of the board of directors, Dr. Zbigniew Brzeziński. The president and member of the board of directors of the Institute, Professor Felix Gross. The executive director of the Polish Institute, Mr. Bolesław Warszewski. The treasurer of our Institute, Mr. Witold Sulimirski, who also, if I'm correct, he is also the new president of the American Bank in Poland, and he partially funded our reception the other day, Mr. Witold Sulimirski. Mrs. Wanda Woliska, a member of our board of directors. And next, of course, is Mr. Bolek Biskupski, co-chairperson, program committee. And of course, Dr. John Stasik, the chairman of the local arrangements committee. I think those of you who are voting members of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences are probably very eager to find out the results of the election that just took place. All of you received mail ballots some time ago. My understanding is that the ballots have been counted and that we can announce the results. The chairman of the Elections Committee, Mr. Kazimierz Raszej, member of the Institute, and also a leading member of the Polonia Technika, an organization of Polish engineers, Polish-American engineers. Mr. Kazimierz Raszej, would he please come up to the podium?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I announce the results of the election, I would like to thank very much the other members of the committee that counted so diligently and hard-working the votes. And I would like to thank Mrs. Julia Częstochowska, Ewa Gierat, and Mrs. Maria Hadagus. Thank you very much for your help. The results of the 1990 election is as follows. To the post of vice president and the member of the boards were elected Dr. Zbigniew Brzeziński and Tadeusz Gromada. To the board of directors were elected, and I'll read in the order of majority of the votes, Mr. Witold Sulimirski, Dr. Stanisław Blewas, Dr. Bolesław Biskupski, and Dr. Elżbieta Adams. I think that we owe them all our good wishes and congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Raszej, for that announcement. Right at this point, I would like to call to the podium our president, one of the founding members of the Polish Institute, a man with whom I have been working very closely since the 1970s, which is already a very long time. So it gives me a great personal pleasure to introduce to you a great humanist, a great scholar, and a very good friend of mine, Professor Felix Gross.
Thank you very much, Professor Gromada. I'm very proud that I can work with him, and I must say that we owe in this meeting very much to his energy, enterprising spirit, organizational talent, his tremendous attention to detail. He mentioned his assistants and collaborators, but he didn't mention himself. It took him a year to prepare this and organize this annual meeting. It is an annual work indeed. We meet today at a revolutionary moment in the history of Europe and in the history of the world. The world is changing. Basically, we start practically a new historical epoch. Since this development took place in Eastern Europe and in Poland, it has an obvious effect and the Polish Institute. It has an effect of equal magnitude. I cannot say that everybody was wrong and did not expect of this change. The changes came rather unexpected. But let me mention a member of the Polish Institute who anticipated very early the end of the totalitarian empire in the Soviet Union. It was no one else but Jan Lehon. He told me, you know, when I was a young boy, my father used to take on Sunday his top hat. The king of Bulgaria paid a tribute to the Sultan of Turkey. There were three emperors in Europe. Now the Bulgarians do not pay anymore a tribute to the Sultan who doesn't anymore rule from Constantinople. There are no emperors. And that will be the fate of Stalin and when Hitler was of Hitler. As usually poets, he saw the future much more clearly. But the changes are very basic, and for us is also an end of a certain mission which was established by the member of the Polish Academy of Sciences who founded this institute, and we have to rethink and redirect the activities of the Polish Institute into far more positive way than before. I think also that we should return in a certain sense and communicate with the new Polska Akademia Umiejętności, which was resurrected after it was closed by the communist regime and before by the Germans, and we should establish close relation with those institutions which really were the founders of our institute. The institute is before a new period, and we are already beginning to discuss how to strengthen our relation with our Polish friends in the Polish universities, which we always had, and how to expand our work in the United States. We have the three elements in which we should work. It is the United States, Poland, and the Polish-American communities. With this, I would like also to mention that there are other changes in the Polish Institute. We do not have a hall like that. Perhaps one time we will have a building like this wonderful one. We have a modest home, and we had a very substantial mortgage and difficulties. We received just at this time two substantial gifts, the director, Professor Mr. Waszewski, will speak about, which permit us to reduce quite drastically and retire our mortgage and open also a new period in our existence. We had many crises, but we were never quitters. We were able to keep the organization going and to take the crisis rather with smile than with the anger. With this, I would like to finish and to wish you a very pleasant dinner and thank you for your participation in our meeting.
I would now like to very much to call upon our executive director, Mr. Bolesław Waszewski, to speak to us. He has been working diligently at the Institute for now over a year and a half, and we're very happy to have him with us at the Institute, and I'm sure he is going to expand on some of the things that Professor Grosz has just mentioned. Panie Bolesławie, prosimy do mikrofonu.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, przy tym stole prezydialnym była uchwała, że ja muszę mówić po polsku. W imię zasady, że jesteśmy dwujęzycznym, z dwujęzyczną instytucją, polską i amerykańską. Ale spróbujmy jedno i drugie, więc może się uda jakoś wyjść z tej sytuacji. I believe that you will deal with me the appreciation of this 48th annual meeting of Polish Institute of Art and Sciences, which was a very successful meeting, and meeting which will give us in the future quite a lot of appreciation and encouragement for the next years to work. Zdążając do półwiekowej działalności Instytutu, możemy sobie powiedzieć, że ten Instytut nie opuścił skrzydeł po tych 48 latach i że jest absolutnie na poziomie wykonywania tych zadań, którzy nasi poprzednicy byli tak wzniośli, żeby ustawić to jako rodzaj Akademii Umiejętności na emigracji, skoro Polska znalazła się w bardzo trudnej sytuacji, zarówno wojennej, jak i później pod dyktaturą komunistyczną. W tej chwili mamy tę sytuację rewolucyjną w Polsce. Ona jest oczywiście rewolucyjną sytuacją w całej wschodniej i centralnej Europie, jak zarówno objęła to głównie, czy przede wszystkim ta rewolucja polska. I w tej chwili przed nami na emigracji i przed Poloniami stoi nowe zadanie, nowa rzeczywistość, do której musimy się ustosunkować i którą musimy objąć naszą myślą, naszą działanią i podjęcia nową misją. Dlatego na panelu wczorajszym poddaliśmy jedną z takich podstawowych spraw, które winny pomóc Polsce w zakresie właśnie kulturalno-naukowym i oświatowo-intelektualnym pomocy. Uważaliśmy na wczorajszym panelu, że powinny te nasze organizacje kulturalno-naukowe, oświatowe działać wspólnie, ażeby dorobek ich w stosunku do Polski był jak najbardziej znakomity, znamienny, dlatego że Polska potrzebuje dzisiaj tej wielkiej pomocy. Żebyśmy nie działali w pojedynkę tylko, ale żebyśmy koordynowali naszą współpracę i nasze możliwości pomocy w zakresie kulturalnym, naukowym, oświatowym w Polsce, żebyśmy dali jak najbardziej, prawda, nasz wkład. Z radością podkreśliłem i mam nadzieję, że Państwo podzielą, że ta nasza 48. konwencja była absolutnie udaną konwencją i bardzo successful, jak myśmy po angielsku powiedzieli, i dająca jak najbardziej nadzieję na przyszłe jakieś wspaniałe działania. Ale ta radość jest tym większa, że na środki prowadzenia tej działalności, o której mówimy i której Polska potrzebuje, mieliśmy dotychczas bardzo skromne ekonomiczne i finansowe możliwości. I dlatego z Państwem się dzielę tą większą jeszcze radością na tym 48. zjeździe, że właśnie przyszły jak najlepsze wiadomości na tematy właśnie ekonomiczno-finansowe i pomocy tej instytucji, żeby mogła spełniać w dalszym ciągu jak najbardziej pożyteczne i jak najbardziej wydajne zadania. Mianowicie, umierająca polska para na emigracji w Stanach Zjednoczonych, państwo Franciszek i Adela Pawliszak przeznaczyli w swoim spadku na Instytut Naukowy 110 tysięcy dolarów, które dają nam możliwość na to. Proszę Państwa, zgadzacie się, że to jest podniecająca kiedyś. Nasz budżet roczny na całą działalność, łącznie ze spłatami mortgage'u na dom, wynosił od 150 do 200 tysięcy dolarów, żeśmy się męczyli z tym budżetem, prawda, żeby absolutnie jakoś, prawda, przetrwać. Ale nie koniec tej dobrej wiadomości. W spadku po Tadeuszu Sędzimirze, nie trzeba przedstawiać tego wielkiego nazwiska na emigracji, którego wkład ekonomiczny nie tylko w polskie życie ekonomiczne, ale w światowe, że tak powiem, życie ekonomiczne jest bardzo wielki, że w spadku zostawił również wielki majątek przeznaczony dla Instytutu Naukowego. Dzisiaj na naszym zebraniu Board of Directors spotkaliśmy się z tą wspaniałą wiadomością od syna zmarłego Tadeusza Sędzimira, Michała Sędzimira, naszego członka Board of Directors, który nas zawiadomił, że w spadku po jego ojcu Instytut Naukowy otrzyma około 120 tysięcy dolarów. Proszę Państwa, jak udany jest ten nasz zjazd, tak chyba bardzo podniecającym jest to, że to nie jest tak ostatni nasz zjazd udany, ale że dzięki tym naszym możliwościom, wspomaganym tym wielkim patriotom polskim, że nam wspomogli, prawda, również finansowo, że będziemy mogli następne zjazdy w nie gorszym wydaniu odbywać niż ten, który się dzisiaj odbywa. W dodatku Fundacja Jóźwikowskiego również przeznaczyła w tym roku, może skromne, ale w każdym razie wydajne dla nas pomoc w wysokości 30 tysięcy dolarów. Czyli jak Państwo z tego przedstawienia krótkiego mogą się zorientować, będziemy dysponować w Instytucie Naukowym blisko 300 tysięcy dolarów, co jest właściwie naszym byłym 2,5-letnim chyba budżetem w przeszłości. I dlatego będziemy mogli spłacić między innymi dużą część naszego mortgage'u, tego mortgage'u z 300 tysięcy dolarów, któryśmy zakupowali ten dom, zostało w tej chwili 230 tysięcy, więc na pewno, jak Państwo zauważyli z tego przedstawienia, będziemy mogli, prawda, odetchnąć, że tymi funduszami, które wpłynęły, prawda, dzięki tym wielkim patriotom, będziemy mogli, prawda, spłacić na pewno największą część tego naszego budżetu. Tym dobrym akcentem kończę i jeszcze raz składam na ręce pana Michała Sędzimira, że ojciec był tak uprzejmy, prawda, że przeznaczył na ten instytut tak wydajną sumę. Dziękuję bardzo.
Dziękujemy, serdecznie dzięki. Well, I think everyone realizes that this is great news for the Polish Institute. It's true that today the Polish Institute is faced with a completely new set of circumstances inside of Poland, which demands from us new responses and new policies, but it does not change our essential mission, which is to continue to advance knowledge about Poland and Polish America in the United States. The well-known political and ideological obstacles that prevented close and direct cooperation with Polish institutions and Polish authorities have been largely removed, and a completely new era is opening up, which offers tremendous positive benefits for both sides. It is truly a historic moment, a historic opportunity, which we must be able to take advantage of. If we do not, then we will be judged harshly by history. It is up to us, and I do mean each and every one of us, to make a strong personal commitment to respond to these challenges in a generous and imaginative way. I believe that we can do it. I believe we must do it. And I think that at the 48th annual meeting of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences, some very important steps have been taken in that direction. Ladies and gentlemen, on September 1, 1989, almost a year ago, the Polish Institute lost one of its most illustrious members and one of its most loyal and generous supporters. Right from the very, very beginning of the Polish Institute in 1942. I'm, of course, referring to Tadeusz Sędzimir. The Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences is planning to honor the memory of this world-class metallurgist. He is referred to as the Polish Bessemer, an inventor, industrialist, and above all, a great humanist and a great Polish patriot and gentleman. in the fall of this year, on the first anniversary of the passing of Tadeusz Sengimir, with a very special symposium. You will be hearing about that shortly. We are very, very, very happy and very fortunate to have with us this evening the heir of the Sengimir tradition, of the Sengimir legacy, his oldest son, Mr. Michael Sengimir, who has been able to fill the shoes of his father without any great difficulty. He's a brilliant engineer, metallurgist, inventor in his own right. For over 25 years, he has held the position of president of the T. Sengimir Corporation, with divisions and affiliates all over the world, in the various continents of the world. Of course, you know, Mr. Sengimir has recently been elected to the board of directors of the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences, and he certainly was and is a most welcome addition. I'd like very much for Mr. Sengimir to address us for a moment and also to tell us something about the great honor that was bestowed on the memory of Tadeusz Sengimir in Poland on May 4th, 1990, that symbolizes better than anything, I think, the great changes that have taken place in Poland. I have in front of me a document. I will read it very quickly in Polish. W dniu hutniczego święta 4 maja 1990 roku w oparciu o decyzję Ministra Przemysłu Rzeczypospolitej Polskiej podjęta na wniosek Rady Pracowniczej i Dyrekcji, a także za zgodą rodziny wielkiego polskiego konstruktora i światowej sławy wynalazcy, krakowska huta przyjmuje imię Tadeusza Sengimira.
Dziękuję, panie Tadeuszu. Wielmożni państwo. I will speak in English because I believe there are some people who do not understand Polish. First of all, I would like to thank the administration of the Polish Institute for making this announcement. And from the side of my family, we are very glad that we were able to announce this gift today and not wait any longer. It was a personal pleasure for me to attend today's meeting, to be at different sessions, to see magnificent attendance and intelligent and very deep discussion of the subject matter before us. We are discussing current problems, be it in art, be it in science. And we hope that the results of the same will inure to the benefit of the Polish people. The advent of renaming Nowa Huta necessitated my presence in Poland, which was at the same time when I had to go to speak at the AGH, the Akademia Górniczo-Hutnicza, and also at the Institute of Nonferrous Metals. It involved, first of all, a morning meeting with Premier Mazowiecki in New York, a luncheon with Deputy Premier Mr. Janowski, and then in Poland with the American Ambassador Mr. Davis and Mrs. Niezawitowska before proceeding on to Krakow and to Katowice. To make the story short, what is the impression? People are wonderful, pleasant, welcoming you, treating you like the best guest, but their problems are tremendous. You have to start with infrastructure. The basic lack of communications. Telephone is only one of them. People need training, or rather retraining into new jobs and upgrading the categories to the Western standards. In management, banking, economics, and so on. They need financial help, credits. But what's most important, the correct knowledge of how to use them, not to waste them. They need technical help, agreements. And that's where we come in, to help to negotiate them. But to give you the practical impression, just a couple of days I have had a response, one from Brazil and one from Connecticut in financial matters, only to find that the management has changed and now we don't know with whom we have to discuss it. One more problem. But we'll overcome it. Poland needs experts, experts to earn the foreign exchange. And they must now identify and produce goods which are of quality and in sufficient numbers in order to secure a good market share. They have to also secure the market. Where? Competing in the West with similar goods or going towards the East and other countries where the markets are open? That's subject for discussion. They need medical help, ecological help, and also social help. But what do they have? They have raw materials. Plenty of galena, the raw material to make copper. They have coke made out of coal, electric power. They have tremendous agricultural potential. And they have people. There is an actual population explosion at this time in Poland. On that are surmounted socioeconomic problems, the feeling of safety between two powerful neighbors. They are adjusting to change. But most of all, which is needed, and that was called very well by Mrs. Niezawitowska, the government spokesperson, they need the young people to stay in Poland and build Poland. Conclusion, we have to give Poland help. We, Polish emigres here in the States and elsewhere. We have to give them support. We have to give them our hearts. And we have to give them encouragement. Most important of all, go there and see it for yourself. But here we are at the Institute. We had the conferences, we examined many ideas, and perhaps if I can summarize our whole meetings of those 2 days, what do we have from here to transfer to Poland? Our intellect. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sengimir. Ladies and gentlemen, if a poll were taken in the United States and the question were asked, who's the most famous and most distinguished American of Polish ancestry? I'm sure that the overwhelming majority of Americans would answer unhesitatingly, Zbigniew Brzeziński. And remarkably enough, most of those Americans would even be able to pronounce Brzeziński quite decently. Well, we have this person with us here today in the flesh. He certainly is not a stranger to us. In fact, we consider him a very, very important and close member of the Polish Institute family. After all, he is a long-standing member of the Polish Institute. He is one of the vice presidents of the Polish Institute. He's been serving on the board of directors for many, many years, and he is also a consistent supporter of our Institute, morally and materially. It's not easy to introduce Zbigniew Brzeziński because he has such an incredible number of achievements. He is no doubt one of the most brilliant intellects, political thinkers in the country, perhaps in the world. When Brzeziński speaks, Americans listen. He is the author of innumerable books, and the latest one, the bestseller, entitled The Grand Failure, The Birth and Death of Communism in the 20th Century, which is an absolute must reading for all citizens of the United States, and it is required reading in my classes at my college. The This book was written with uncanny prescience when most so-called experts were still hesitating and were not quite sure about the future of communism. Dr. Brzeziński was able to diagnose its terminal illness and predict its imminent death. Of course, all of you remember that Dr. Brzeziński was appointed a national security advisor to the president from 1977 to 1981, one of the best decisions that Jimmy Carter ever made during his administration. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his role in the normalization of U.S.-Chinese relations and for his contributions to the human rights and national security policies in the United States. He is presently counselor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington and professor of American foreign policy at the Paul Nitze School of Advanced International Studies, Johns Hopkins University in Washington, D.C. It now gives me a great pleasure, and it's also my great honor to present to you Dr. Zbigniew Brzeziński, who will address us on the subject, Prospects for Poland. Dr. Brzeziński.
Panie Przewodniczący, Panie Dyrektorze, dziękuję za tak bardzo miłe wprowadzenie i przede wszystkim gratuluję Państwu tak bardzo udanego zjazdu. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, you have already been told that the subject of my talk is prospects for Poland. It is an issue, obviously, of enormous importance politically and emotionally. Emotionally, certainly for anyone who has any sense of identification with Poland, who has any Polish blood in his veins. But politically, it's an issue of transcendental importance. For Poland has been the catalyst of change in the East. It is in Poland that the year that has been so dramatic and historically significant truly commenced. Let me just take you back a year ago. I assume some of you must have been present at the meeting of this institute, which was held roughly a year ago. What then was the situation? The first round of the elections in Poland had just been held. In these elections, 35% of the seats were opened to free contestation. And Solidarity won the overwhelming majority of them. But it was still just 35%. The agreement which led to these elections involved a compromise, a limited compromise. What Solidarity attained a year ago was something for which it had much hoped: legalization as a trade union. But that was all. In return, it was expected that the 35% free elections and the legalization of Solidarity would lead to support by the Solidarity of the communist government's program of economic reform, which the communist rulers of Poland came to realize could not be sustained without wider popular support. That was the situation a year ago. And yet, within 1 year, the situation has been fundamentally altered. The electoral victory, the shockwaves which it generated, the stunning decomposition of communist power, the demoralization of communist rulers, the sense of political power within the Polish people which these events unleashed led to a paralysis within the governmental structure, to the failure of creating a new communist government. And finally, just barely 9 months ago, to the appointment of the first truly, authentically Polish government in Warsaw since 1939. Just 9 months ago. That crisis in turn then unleashed enormous tumult in East Germany, which precipitated the political upheaval that eventually led to the destruction of the Berlin Wall, and then the collapse of the East German regime. And that then in turn precipitated the political change, the 10 days of the so-called Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia. And all of a sudden, Poland's neighbors to the south and to the west were no longer ruled by communists. And that in turn stimulated more dynamism within Poland. And the Solidarity government proceeded with processes of change which fundamentally altered the nature of the political situation in Poland. All this in 9 months. And all this with Poland as the spearhead. This is why what is happening in Poland is not only an issue of emotional importance, it is an issue of great political significance. And for this reason, it is appropriate and necessary for us to reflect seriously on the prospects for Poland. What can we anticipate in the months and the years ahead? What are the prospects of Poland as Poland tackles difficult domestic problems, as the international environment around Poland alters? Will democracy prevail? Will it become institutionalized? Will the transition to a free market economy succeed? Will Poland be the first successful example of an effective political and economic transformation of a once communist system into a thriving, politically and economically, democracy? That is the central question for the future. And it is therefore important for us to assess these prospects soberly and carefully, and to reflect on the international and domestic settings in which Poland will confront its difficult challenges of change. Let me accordingly share with you my thoughts and also some perhaps prescriptions regarding the prospects for Poland internationally and domestically. In my view, by and large, the international aspects of the Polish situation in the foreseeable future are relatively positive. They provide grounds for cautious optimism. For one thing, it is quite clear that we are living in an era in which the Cold War is, in fact, coming to an end. One can debate what one means by an end to a non-violent but intense historic conflict, but it is clear that in some fashion, the Cold War is not only coming to an end, but it is being terminated in the victory of the West and of the United States specifically. In that great historical contest, which lasted more than 40 years between the United States and the Soviet Union, it is the United States that is prevailing. It is the Soviet Union that is acknowledging de facto its defeat and seeking some form of an armistice or accommodation. And that is a decisively important geopolitical reality of benefit to Poland. Moreover, the United States intends to remain engaged in Europe, and specifically in Eastern Europe. And for the United States, Poland is an important focus of its engagement. It so happens that at this moment, for example, this president of the United States is personally interested in two regions of the world particularly.
There are two parts of the world which command his personal intellectual interest, and they happen to be China and Eastern Europe. And his interest in Eastern Europe is a genuinely personal one, and it happens to be heavily focused on Poland. And that is a felicitous circumstance for Poland, because it underlines the American interest in facilitating and encouraging positive change in Poland. By the same token, the Soviet Union has not only failed to prevail in the Cold War, has not only come to realize that in a historical sense it is the loser in that Cold War, but it is facing a deepening internal crisis, a crisis which by no means can be described as a transitional crisis, but which is a historic crisis. A transitional crisis, by way of example, was the New Deal in the United States, a response to the Great Depression, from which the United States emerged revitalized. A historic crisis is an enduring crisis of loss of faith, dissipation of energy, moral demoralization, political disintegration, intensified national conflicts. The Ottoman Empire faced a historic crisis throughout the 19th century. It is this kind of crisis that the Soviet Union is now experiencing, and in my judgment will continue to experience for years to come, probably for decades to come. Because one critical aspect of that crisis is the rise of non-Russian nationalism among 50% of the Soviet population. And that nationalism, once awakened, is a dynamic and contagious force, initially irrational and very difficult to subsume. And thus, that dimension of the crisis alone dooms the Soviet Union, dooms Russia specifically, to debilitating internal engagements and difficulties, which will continue to sap its vitality for many years to come. Another aspect of the international scene which is favorable to Poland is the fact that the unification of Germany, which normally might be viewed as a threat to Poland, is taking place within the context of a unifying Europe. And that unification of Europe is not only a reality, but an accelerating reality. In fact, wisely, the West Europeans themselves, including the Germans, have responded to the growing prospects of the immediate unification of Germany with the deliberate acceleration of the economic and political targets for the unification of Europe. And thus, the unification of Germany is taking place in the context of an integrating Europe. And it means that there will be a framework for that unification, reducing the otherwise obvious concern that such unification of a powerful German state could and indeed should evoke among its neighbors. Moreover, the unification of Europe is not just a phenomenon restricted to the neighbors of Germany itself. It involves the Germans. I think it behooves us to realize the extent to which Germany today is tied organically through thousands of economic and social and educational and political and military bonds to the unifying Europe. These bonds are of an integral type. They're organic. They provide benefits to all concerned, Germans included. And hence they make it likely that these processes will not be reversed. We should also not lose sight of the fact that the Germans, and especially the younger Germans today, are identifying themselves with Europe. They think of themselves as Europeans. Their sense of national destiny is being defined in different ways than was tragically the case half a century ago. And that, too, is a positive development which one should recognize and draw implications from. And beyond that, there are other aspects of the international situation which are relatively favorable to Poland. In Czechoslovakia, Poland today has a government that's more friendly to Poland personally as well as collectively than any Czechoslovak government in history. The new Czechoslovak leadership was tempered in a difficult political struggle with a brutal Stalinist regime with assistance from Solidarity. It was young Polish Solidarity activists who used to meet secretly in the Kierkonosze Mountains with Havel and Czernogórski and others. And these bonds of friendship are enduring, and they do have an impact on political attitudes. The new Hungarian government. The new Hungarian government, a democratic government, a government committed to the traditional values of the Hungarian people, is headed by a distinguished non-communist historian who suffered personally from communist oppression and whose father has a street named after him in Warsaw because he was the Hungarian organizer of relief and refuge for the Polish soldiers and officers and civilians who fled to Hungary in 1939 and were given hospitality and protection by the Hungarian nation. This tells you something about the attitude of the Hungarian government towards Poland. And this too creates a regionally more beneficial setting for prospects for Poland. And last but not least, in the West at large, there is the recognition, widening and deepening, of the importance of Poland in the processes of change in the communist world. There is recognition that what happens in Poland sets precedents for other communist states, indeed possibly even for the Soviet Union itself. And after an initially hesitant and timid response, Western engagement in the Polish economic experiment is also growing. When Wałęsa, roughly a year ago, suggested that Poland be the recipient of $10 billion of Western economic aid, he was ridiculed. Yet as of today, purely governmental pledges to Poland, not including pledges from multilateral institutions or the private sector, but pledges from the 24 governments of the OECD, approximate $7.5 billion. This is a substantial measure of Western commitment in the future of Poland. But I think one would be unwise to draw a Pollyannish picture. All of these factors create a positive international environment, but it is possible that they could change. Because as the years go on, significant alterations in the posture and engagement of the external world could take place. I emphasize the American interest in Poland, but I think one has to contemplate the possibility that in the years to come, there might be an American turn inward, a gradual diminution of the American interest in Europe, especially if accelerated by military disengagement from Europe. This possibility cannot be discounted. It is quite conceivable that some years from now, an integrated Germany, a member of the European community, a loyal member of NATO, will say to all of the powers in the West and in the East that it no longer is prepared to be the only occupied country in Europe, and that it wishes foreign troops to leave, in which case we will have no choice but to take American forces out of Germany, in which case there will be no combat ground forces of the United States anywhere on the European continent. That could alter dramatically the international equation. One cannot dismiss the possibility that even prior to such a development, the Soviet leadership recognizing its weakness, will try to stimulate a fundamental alteration of international arrangements in Europe by proposing the summary removal of all Soviet forces from Germany in return for a German request that NATO forces be removed. And it is an open question how the German electorate might respond to such an offer. I would think that in the foreseeable future, the German electorate would reject such an offer, realizing its risks to Germany itself. But one cannot be entirely sure of that being the case indefinitely. Beyond that, within the Soviet Union itself, the historic crisis which I have emphasized could precipitate dramatic changes, of course. It is conceivable that the enduring reality of the Soviet Union will be the historic crisis of which I've spoken. But it is also conceivable that this enduring crisis will not merely mean democratizing chaos, but at some point a sudden lurch back to some repressive form of nationalist dictatorship. In brief, the externally positive environment which exists today and which is likely to continue existing into the foreseeable future could at some point alter significantly. And that does give to Polish foreign policy a sense of urgency. And it does mean that it is important for Poland to capitalize on the opportunities which now exist. I assess the foreign policy of the Mazowiecki government, and particularly the handling of the foreign policy agenda by Foreign Minister Skubiszewski, most highly. I believe it has been a skillful, effective foreign policy. The first truly Polish foreign policy in almost half a century. But I think it is important that in this favorable context, in which I expect the border question with Germany will shortly and finally be resolved to Polish satisfaction, for Poland to give the highest priority to its longer-term relationship with Europe, to the expansion of its relationships regionally, and to the normalization of its relationship with the Soviet Union. The entry into Europe has to be Poland's long-term objective. One realizes, of course, that this is not possible in the foreseeable future. The gap between Poland and the conditions in the West, economic and political, is too wide. But Poland should seek and insist on obtaining from the European community a longer-term schedule with stages in it which would give the Polish people a sense of what their current economic sacrifices will eventually yield in terms of Poland's relationship with Europe. If such a schedule could be obtained, and even if it were to last over 10 or more years, at least there would be a sense of direction and a sense of historic stages which would justify the sacrifices which the Polish people internally have to undertake. If there is a calendar for Polish entry into Europe, it would make it easier to pursue the necessary domestic sacrifices that everyone in Poland has to now undertake. With regard to the neighbors, the present felicitous situation in Prague and Budapest creates opportunities for regional cooperation at a time when neither Soviet nor German presence in East Europe is decisive. That in the long run is geopolitically of vital importance to Poland, and it would create stronger structures, more resilient, in the event that the external environment at some future point should become less felicitous. And with the Soviet Union, given the internal Soviet difficulties, the opportunities for normalizing the relationship, for undoing past injustices, for correcting the suffering that was inflicted on so many hundreds of thousands of Polish people, is particularly timely. And here, too, I must say that I welcome the efforts pursued by the Mazowiecki government to redress past sufferings, to correct past injustices. But beyond the external environment, it is ultimately within Poland that the prospects for Poland will be decided. And here, I think one has to begin one's analysis and one's reflections about Poland's future with an acknowledgement explicitly of the remarkable attainments of the Mazowiecki government over a short 9 months. Within that short period of less than a year, the social and the political profile of the country has been dramatically transformed. The country is pursuing today an independent foreign policy, and Poland has demonstrated that on the issue of German membership in NATO and on the issue of Lithuania. Poland has abandoned the censorship that for 45 years communist rulers had imposed on Polish intellectual, political, and social life. And the secret police within the last several weeks has been completely and comprehensively disbanded. The local government has been altered and handed back to the people. The communist symbols which have denigrated Polish sovereignty have been rejected and authentic Polish national symbols restored, giving Poles a sense of pride and identification with their state. There is no longer this artificial Soviet creation of people's democracy, but historically authentic Rzeczpospolita Polska. The crown on the eagle symbolizes Polish independence. Democracy within Poland is today a reality, and most important of all, the Mazowiecki government has undertaken a comprehensive program of economic reforms without parallel in scope and dynamism and determination in any other post-communist country. And it is this economic program that has won the greatest acclaim in the West and has contributed so much to a Western reassessment of what is happening within Poland. In Poland, sometimes there is some sense among some people that the pace of change is inadequate. Some people have been disappointed that there wasn't more rapid personnel changes in television. Others have felt that the nomenklatura was not removed rapidly enough. Others still would like to see trials of those who were most guilty for the most heinous Stalinist crimes. And I sympathize with all of these aspirations, and they're founded well. But they do not detract from the totality of the Mazowiecki achievements, from their scope, from their ambition, and from their determination. And here particularly the economic program is the test of Poland's ability to transform itself. The so-called Balcerowicz reform program has made Poland the spearhead of change in the East. And today, Poland is the country which increasingly in Western financial and business circles is viewed as the sleeper, as the country that potentially offers the greatest hope for most significant change, potentially even the greatest rewards for those in the West who become involved in the Polish adventure. This, I hasten to add, was not the case even a few months ago. A few months ago, the prevailing wisdom, the conventional truism, was that Poland is risky, unstable, unpredictable, that Hungary and Czechoslovakia were the better bets for those in the West who wish to be involved in the economic changes in the East. This has changed dramatically. In the last several months, the financial and business circles in the West have started looking at Poland much more carefully. And this is not only the private sector, it is also the international multilateral institutions. Today in the World Bank, Poland is considered to be the most interesting country in Eastern Europe. And the World Bank office, which is now being opened in Poland, will be only one of three World Bank offices around the world, which will be headed by a World Bank director, the other two being India and Indonesia. The World Bank exposure in Poland is projected to be on a per capita basis equivalent to that of the World Bank's exposure in Mexico. The head of the IMF repeatedly cites Poland as the model for economic change. And private businessmen are listening and are beginning to react. Let me give you some statistics on the East-West joint ventures that have now been registered with the East. I hasten to add that an East-West joint venture which is registered is not the same thing as a joint venture that's being implemented. It's a statement of intention, but it nonetheless gives you some sense of how the Western business community is reacting to the changes in the East. In Czechoslovakia, there have so far been 67. In Hungary, 890. In the Soviet Union, 1,274. In Poland, 1,400. This is a measure of Western involvement in Poland, of confidence in the nature of the program of change adopted by the Polish government. And I think we can say that insofar as that program is concerned, it being composed essentially of two strategic programs, stabilization and transformation, the first part is already making dramatic headway. The transformation of the Polish economy is significantly underway. The privatization is now being discussed, and many in the business community would like to see more rapid progress. There is some concern in the Western business community that change here is somewhat slow. But here too, important decisions are now being taken, and one can anticipate that privatization in Poland, contributing to the transformation of the economy, will move more rapidly in the months to come. On the horizon, however, are two clouds, one economic, one political. The economic is the question of the recession and the unemployment. Will the stabilization so far achieved, will the promise of transformation be undermined by the recession and the prospects for unemployment? This is increasingly a source of concern. And those in the West who follow the Polish experiment closely hope fervently that concerns over these issues do not result in compromises in the essential character of the economic reform program that the Mazowiecki government is pursuing. The consensus in the West is that only by staying on course, by overriding the difficulties, will Poland eventually succeed in the second strategic goal of its reform program, which is a comprehensive economic transformation of the Polish system. To that end, Western aid will be needed. And there is growing recognition in the West that a safety net will have to be created, that assistance will have to be given to Poland when unemployment reaches truly significant numbers, that Poland will not be able to cope with that dilemma by itself. Both in the United States and Western Europe, there is recognition of this necessity. And I am personally inclined to the view that Western assistance will be forthcoming when the difficulties that are approaching reach their critical stage. But the second aspect of that problem is political determination, political staying power. Will Poland stay on course politically as well as economically? A great deal of Western confidence in Poland is derived from the fact that Poland not only has an ambitious economic program, but an effective government, which is supported by the society and capable of encouraging that society to undertake the necessary sacrifices. If that stability were to be undermined, a great deal of Western confidence in Poland would decline. There would be hesitations. There would be uncertainties. And thus, it is important that the political situation in Poland should remain stable, that change continues in an evolutionary character, that it be sustained, but that it not be destabilized. And here there is no doubt that among informed people in the West, there is concern over some indications of possible political conflicts, particularly on the Warsaw-Gdańsk axis. I speak, of course, of the much discussed possibility of a conflict between the Mazowiecki government and Lech Wałęsa and Solidarity. Some aspects of this have been exaggerated in Western press reports, deliberately blown up. But one cannot deny that there is friction, that there is a diversity of viewpoints, that there is some surfacing antagonism, if not between the principals, then between their associates. And that could be damaging, destabilizing, particularly during this critical phase of socio-economic transformation. The ostensible issue in the conflict is the pace of political change. The ostensible issue is, should the compromise achieved at the round table more than a year ago be continued indefinitely into the future, or should it be changed? And if so, when and how? And it is over this issue that conflicts have developed and have become also, to some extent, personal antagonisms. Yet I strongly believe that these conflicts are not beyond resolution, that these conflicts can be resolved. Because after all, there is consensus in Poland that by May 3, 1991, there should be in Poland a new constitution, and there should be in Poland a new Sejm, fully elected freely by the people, and not only in elections in which 35% of the seats were subject to free elections. On this, there is consensus, and hence there is a fundamental agreement that the existing political status quo cannot endure beyond May 3, 1991. And hence this debate, the disagreement, the personal frictions about acceleration of political change really involve the question of what happens between now and May 3, 1991. Roughly 11 months from now. Should elections be held in the fall, or should they be held in the spring? And who should then be president, and when should the next president be elected? I believe that in the context of this dispute, which fundamentally involves a narrow issue, it should be possible for the Polish political leadership to reach the compromise that Poland needs and the international community would welcome. I should think it ought to be possible, both for Wałęsa and for Mazowiecki, to articulate together a joint political program for Poland, a joint political calendar for Poland, which would be the parallel to the economic program of change for Poland. The Mazowiecki government has an economic program of change, which is defined, strategically determined, and resolutely executed. There should be a parallel political program. A program, after all, just for the next 10 months. A joint political program and a joint political calendar. And such a joint program would eliminate the ambiguities about the future, ambiguities which breed animus and political conflict. It would clear the air and would help to define Poland's political direction. One could envisage, looking at this problem from afar, some basic components of what such a program might entail. Certainly, it would be presumptuous and rash for anyone outside of Poland and far from Poland to try to give concrete and specific advice. But certainly one is entitled to think out loud as to what at least might be the broad framework of a shared political program around which the democratic forces in Poland could coalesce, thereby ensuring Poland the political stability that it needs and deserves. And I should think that four basic general components might be the appropriate elements of such a program. The first would be a defined schedule for parliamentary elections, either set for a specific date this fall or next spring. After all, the date, either this fall or next spring, is not a question of principle. It is not an issue on which the democratic coalition should split. It is a tactical question. It is a tactical political question which every prime minister in a democratic parliamentary system periodically faces, which is, what is the optimum political moment for elections? The purpose of elections in a democratic system is to ensure a stable majority that can provide the basis for a stable government that can govern stably. That should be the purpose of the elections in Poland. And it should be the tactical decision of Polish leaders that leads to the date. If the optimum moment is in the spring, they should be in the spring. If the judgment is that socio-economic difficulties could weaken the government and strengthen the extreme left and strengthen the extreme right, then it might be wiser not to wait till the spring, but to have them in the fall. The purpose of the election should be to ensure that the democratic program of the Mazowiecki government is endorsed by the public, that the economic reform program, painful and difficult, is endorsed by the public. And therefore, the criterion of choice for the date of the elections is not some abstract question of principle. It is not a question of who's more anti-communist, who rejects more forcefully the 40 years of communist dictatorship, but a tactical political question of what is the best time for winning a handsome majority for the government. And if it should be the judgment that it's better to wait till the last minute, they should be in the spring. If it is the judgment that it is the better part of wisdom to have them now, when all public opinion polls show that the Mazowiecki government has an overwhelming majority, then they should be this fall. The second element should be the schedule for the completion of the new constitution and its approval by the new Sejm. The new constitution that Poland should adopt, an authentically Polish constitution, replacing the communist constitution that is still in force, though with amendments, should be adopted by a fixed date by the new Polish parliament. It should not be voted on by a parliament in which two-thirds of the members are by appointment and not by election. To be sure, the members of the former Communist Party and the Polish Sejm today are very compliant, very cooperative, very helpful to the Solidarity leadership, but they do not speak for the Polish people. And the Sejm that adopts a new constitution should be a representative Sejm of the Polish people. So the deadline for the constitution should be set in relationship to the date for the elections. And the new parliament should then formally approve the new constitution. Thirdly, there should then be a schedule for presidential elections after the completion of the new constitution and after its approval by the new parliament. The new president should be elected in the context of the new constitution, presumably sometime next spring, in any case, no matter when the parliamentary elections are set. And finally, the new constitution should be adopted into force and the new president should be inaugurated on May 3rd, 1991, the 200th anniversary of the constitution of 3rd of May. I believe that such a joint political calendar, such a joint political program, should be capable of enlisting the full support of the government and of Lech Wałęsa and the Solidarity Movement. I should think that in that context, it should be possible for Lech Wałęsa to totally support the government in the parliamentary elections and to support particularly its economic program, because it would be on the economic program that the government would go to the country asking for support. And I think it should be possible also on that basis to reach an agreement regarding the scope of presidential powers in the new constitution. My own personal view is that it would be best if the new Polish constitution in many respects was similar to the current French constitution, which has a complex but responsibly working arrangement involving special powers both for the president and for the premier, with the premier sustained by the parliament. Such a division of responsibilities would ensure effective executive leadership, but would avoid either the extreme of parliamentary anarchy or the potential of abuse of central executive power. And finally, such an arrangement, I think, would permit an agreement between the parties regarding the presidential candidate in the elections of 1991. I would think that in a setting in which Wałęsa provides full and loyal support to the government in the parliamentary elections, and particularly to its economic program, reciprocity could result in the selection of president, and thereby the emerging political splits could be avoided. All of that would greatly help to enhance political stability in Poland and to reassure the West that Poland's commitment to shape an operative democracy is not going to be undermined either by economic nor political difficulties. Let me add as an aside a specific problem which needs to be recognized as one is reflecting about Poland's prospects, and that is the question of the role and place of General Jaruzelski in any political resolution of the question of change. General Jaruzelski is clearly a highly controversial figure in the Polish political setting. But it is also recognized, particularly by those who have worked with him in recent months, that he has played a critically important and responsible role during the current transition, and that therefore to facilitate the constitutional definition of an authentic Poland by next May, it will be important to find a proper and honorable solution to the place of General Jaruzelski in that context. He is, after all, according to current arrangements, entitled to remain as president for several years, and hence his resignation on a cooperative basis will be an important element in any effort to resolve the Polish political dilemma. One can envisage a variety of arrangements. One will have to find some honorable formula. He may choose to retire to private life. He may wish to write his memoirs. He may wish to be on the sideline. But one may also consider some arrangement in which his military experience can be put to good use. I have been struck by the fact that recently the Polish government has proposed that henceforth the commander of the Warsaw Pact forces no longer be a Soviet general. General Jaruzelski might well be acceptable to the Soviets and the others as the first non-Soviet commander of Warsaw Pact forces, a formula which would provide a gracious way of resolving what otherwise could become a source of a stalemate. Ladies and gentlemen, let me conclude my reflections. I've taken time to share with you my thoughts because Poland's future is of importance to all of us. My bottom line, as I look at the future, is twofold. The first is that, by and large, the international and the domestic prospects for Poland are positive, that there are difficulties, there are challenges, that, by and large, however, all of the problems are manageable, that with determination and commitment, Poland stands a truly good chance of being the first country ever to leave the communist nightmare and to create a successful democracy based on a free market system. And my second broad conclusion is even more important and reinforces my first. And it is that for the first time in more than 50 years, the future of Poland is in Polish hands. Poles themselves, for the first time in more than half a century, can shape their international and domestic destiny. It is Poland who can now shape its foreign policy and can respond to the international